Indeed, here I am, and we forgot to return to my antenna as a topic, which we'll do. I'll probably never see it again, the way things are going. But it is a very, very interesting phenomenon that I can't explain. And I've had a lot of knowledgeable people take a look at it, and they just sort of leave shaking their heads. It is something coming from apparently nothing. There's probably an explanation for it, but I certainly don't have it. We'll get back to Robert Kuntz in just a moment. Briefly, let's go back to the antenna. I really meant to do that because I've scratched my head over that for years now. And there really is a very, very serious amount of voltage and actually a serious amount of current that comes from that antenna. And as I mentioned, it does so on cloudless, beautiful days. It does so at times when the electric power, local electric power, has been off, so that rules out any coupling that might have occurred from the electric lines. In other words, this really is energy coming from someplace, and I've had a lot of suggestions about what it might be, as I mentioned, but none that have been nailed down, and people just leave scratching their heads. Any other comments, Doctor?
Well, Art, you know, we're talking about a possible electrogravitic interaction. Remember that I indicated that these flying saucers apparently have exploited some sort of electrogravitic interaction. The Bayfield-Brown effect is electrogravitic. Your antenna is stuck up in the air, and it's got a lot of copper, I assume, and also... well, it's up in the air. It's got gravitational energy up there. And just like if you took a bucket of water and went up five flights, you'd have gravitational energy stored in the water. So basically, your antenna is coupling. There's an electrogravitic interaction that's coupling the electric, the gravitational energy into the copper through a special interaction, a scalar interaction, or a gauge transformation, and that's producing a rather complicated effects. Among them is, I believe, negative mass electrons. I believe there are four particles created in what I call a lambda 0-0. It's pretty complicated, but a negative mass electron, a positive mass positron, a negative mass positron, and a positive mass electron get created as a quartet. To make a long story short, there's a buildup of negative mass electrons on your antenna. But negative mass electrons have never been looked for one thing, but we don't know if they exist or not. I believe they do. I strongly believe they do. And so I believe that what you're seeing is a combination of factors, among which is negative mass electron buildup.
Okay. Well, Colonel Miller from Kentucky says, Art, I think you're electric arc, or the current and voltage, is being generated because your antenna array is interacting with the magnetic field of Earth. NASA conducted a shuttle experiment with a copper cable, and that cable generated a lot of free energy. Indeed, it did, so much so that it destroyed the cable. It actually, there was so much current when they did that experiment that it destroyed the cable. Maybe I just have a smaller version of that, but again, that implies that the Earth's rotation is involved in some way, or the Earth's mass, or I don't know. I don't know.
Let me say this. Normally, the current is induced in a conductor when there's a moving magnetic field.
That's right.
If you take a magnet and you sweep it past a coil, you induce a current. A voltage.
That's right.
And a current. But if that antenna is fixed to the ground and the ground and the magnetic field moves with the Earth, you're not getting a time-varying magnetic field. So that would not be a conventional explanation, in my opinion.
All right. Well, just for the record, the center of that antenna, the feed point, is at 100 feet. The rest of the antenna, which involves well over a mile of wire, actually 2 miles because it's double, is at 75 feet on 13 towers over 5 acres. And wow, it produces, I mean, you know, you would imagine that there'd be a buildup on it. But you can actually go to the switch that's designed to go to ground for safety, and you can just keep throwing it and throwing it and throwing it. So it's not a slow buildup. It's there every time. Mm-hmm. There's a discharge. Mm-hmm. Boom. It's there immediately again as strong. So
now let me say this. You say that the spark jumps over an inch, right?
Oh, yeah.
Well, you know, the breakdown voltage of air is 30,000 volts per inch. So we're talking about a 30,000-volt signal there if we're using conventional analysis. 30,000 volts, that's quite a bit of voltage.
Yeah, we've looked at it on a scope, and there are both AC and DC components to it, which is also very confusing. The AC components could conceivably be, I suppose, coupling. We didn't get an opportunity to do that kind of measurement, you know, when the electricity was off in the neighborhood, unfortunately. So the AC component could be coupling, I suppose. Anyway, let me leave that. It's time to turn it over to the audience. Let them ask you questions, and okay. Believe me, there are a lot of them. Samantha in Alabama, you're on with Dr. Kuntz. Hi.
Hi. Can you hear me?
I hear you just fine. Go ahead, Samantha.
All right. I was wondering if there was any sites or something like that I can go to see how to make one of those free energy generators.
Well, okay. Samantha, how much technical knowledge do you have?
Well, she's not here now.
Okay.
But she just requested a site. So your site, would it be appropriate?
I don't have information. I can perhaps point you in that direction. If Samantha goes to my website and gets my email address and sends me an email, I'll do my best to help her. Let's see. There are zero-point energy sites, several. I could link her up. But, hey, look, if you don't have something like an electronics technician's ability, maybe a three, you know, like a couple-year associate degree in electronics, or at least some mechanical ability and things like that, it's going to be very difficult. Now, maybe she has that. Maybe Samantha has that ability. If she does, then maybe she can do it. Listen, I'll tell you something, Art. I have learned since I woke up, I didn't used to believe in these UFOs and all that. In fact, I told a friend of mine they were nonsense not more than 10 years ago. You know, I mean, if they were going to show up, they'd come knock on my door. I was a staff scientist at the Lawrence Berkeley Laboratory, where 9 Nobel Prizes were won. I mean, really, they'd tell me right away, or, you know. But anyhow, I have since woken up, and it's a real humbling experience. And I listen to everybody. If someone tells me that a reptilian, they saw a reptilian, I listen. I'm skeptical, but I listen.
There's nothing like seeing something like you saw to convert you, to change you, to change your life.
Oh,
and
it
does do that. That occurred to me as well. All right. Let's keep moving. I said the audience, it is Livermore, California. Ha-ha. Mike, welcome to the program. You're on with Dr. Kuntz.
Oh, Art, what a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
I had a question, but before I go to that, I got an answer to your question. Why would we suppress this?
Yes.
Because it wouldn't be to the benefit of the people who control everything. I mean, if they want to control us, putting out the free energy would not be to their benefit.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm not a conspiracy theorist or anything like that, but it just makes sense to me. But my question was, with this anti-gravity and everything, it really makes sense to me. The guy who did Coral Castle, I mean, would he be using this type of energy, this electromagnetic, the capacitors, everything else?
Okay. That's a very, very good question.
That's
all right, doctor. Indeed, those big blocks that one person couldn't move, and certainly couldn't move overnight or at all, were moved. It was done.
That's an excellent question. I've studied Ed Lead Skalman was the fellow. Now, interestingly enough, Mr. Lead Skalman left behind notes relating to something called a holding magnet. And basically, it was an electromagnet. If you started it up, it kept current flowing. All you have to do is give it a spark and it takes off and it keeps current flowing. The magnetic field is maintained. A student at Purdue University was taking a course. The professor said there can't be these perpetual motion machines. He built a Lee Scalman holding magnet. He brought it in. He had a diode in the series with the magnet. The diode lit up. The magnetic field was maintained without any external source of power. And so that's verification of something that Lee Scalman claimed. and it is inconsistent with most of modern physics unless you include Gates transformations. Mm-hmm. So I would say it is possible that Leeds-Kalman was using some sort of anti-gravity to do what he was doing.
It seems reasonable. All right, Doctor. Quite a few of these. I get these fast blast messages while I'm on the air. Ron in Mountain View says, please ask Dr. Hoons, even though you've done it, Doctor, define gauge transformations.
Okay. There's something called the magnetic vector potential, and there's something called the scalar electromagnetic potential. And those two together form the electromagnetic potentials for a system in a conventional way. Now, it turns out that you can make a transformation on those quantities that preserves the original electric and magnetic fields, but which changes the energy. So basically, you have a system, let's suppose a current flowing through a conductor, a coil. Mm-hmm. You can change the energy of that system without changing the electric and magnetic fields. That's called a gauge transformation. And gauge transformations generate gauge waves. And unless my fellow physicists are going to tell me that gauge waves don't have any energy, then you've got to believe that gauge waves carry energy. So this is a way to change the energy of an electromagnetic system.
All right.
Now,
Roger,
again, let me say this. I'm not saying the energy isn't conserved. I'm saying the electromagnetic energy isn't conserved. The total energy, if you include gauge waves energy, is conserved. So that would be a very important point. I'm not saying that, again. I'm saying that energy is conserved, but electromagnetic energy is not necessarily conserved if there are gauge waves generated.
Roger in Los Angeles, you're on with Dr. Kuntz.
Hi, Art. Fantastic segment here on scalar waves, and I have two quick questions. The first one is, I used to work with Dr. Hunt at her Bioenergy Fields Foundation, and she used to say in her bioenergy healing research that scalar waves were the basis of all energy healing. And some of her research findings with Upledger Institute were just fascinating. So my first question to Dr. Kuntz is, have you seen how scalar wave research might be able to be used in the new paradigm of energy medicine?
The answer to that is yes. Scalar waves, apparently, some kinds of scalar waves, there can be positive and negative energy scalar waves. I've done experiments with scalar waves. This could be considered to be anecdotal because it's my own personal experience. I've created scalar waves in my little lab, and I've used them to affect my body, and they're very positive effects. And also, let me say that negative mass electrons and negative mass positrons have some tendency to be anti-entropic, which means instead of the normal laws of physics say that systems tend to move towards higher and higher degrees of order, disorder, higher and higher degrees of disorder. But with negative mass electrons and negative mass positrons, you can make order. So there can be self-organization. So there can be healing that takes place with these kinds of systems, in my opinion.
Right. Well, what Dr. Hunt used to say is that it didn't matter what the frequency was, as long as the healer and healy were both sending frequencies at 180 degrees toward each other. And when they meet, she says that this phenomena takes place where it no longer has a measurable frequency, but it has mass. And she says these are the scalar waves that is the basis of all energy healing.
Okay. I don't know about energy healing from one person to another. I don't know about scalar waves. They may exist. They may not. I don't know. Okay. But when I'm talking about scalar waves and healing, I'm talking about, for instance, using Tesla coils and neon sign. I have a 12,000-volt neon sign transformer, and I use that to generate scalar waves and other phenomena. And so I can't say for certain one way or another whether it's possible for one person to heal another with scalar waves, and I don't know about the mass aspect of what you're saying.
I think there's one thing that's very interesting, and that's that when you take two frequencies and they meet each other, and I heard you make reference to this tonight, it's very interesting that when these frequencies do meet each other and there's this energy coherence, something happens. Perhaps it's what Dr. Flair Francomano says at NIH. She's one of the geneticists. She says that she believes that DNA vibration, that DNA changes vibration, but we don't have the fractal mathematics or geometry or understanding of how even to devise to measure this. But when I talk to the Hopi shaman, they say, ah, science is now catching up to being able to measure etheric energy. We're getting out of this electromagnetic,
bottle.
It's got us frozen, and we need to branch out. Anyway, my second question, Art, can I jump in on my second question?
All right, very quickly.
Quickly, I'm a friend of John Hutchinson, and I was very excited to hear you talk a lot about him tonight, Dr. Kuntz. And John has an interest in moving his lab out of Canada, and I'm a media director, and I'm looking to see if maybe you and Dr. Kuntz and the other scientific community out there might lend their networking support to maybe make this possible. John's got a small lab, and I think a lot of people know how small it is, and it's limited, and he's in a residential area. Moving it to L.A. or another area out here in the United States that's close to the media departments that he works with, I wanted to know if perhaps you would both be interested in lending your networking support to make that come to a really nice pioneering fruition.
Tell John good luck with immigration.
Yeah.
anyway.
Well, let me say this. If the Canadian people are as intelligent as I think they are, and they're good people, I love the Canadian people, they would do anything they could to get John Hutchison set up with his own lab in California with maybe $30, $40, $50 million a year funding. He would pay you back so many times over. We're talking about anti-gravity material science. He's teleported little pieces of wood into large pieces of aluminum. I've seen an 8-inch wrench get bent in cool with that heat, go into a U, on and on and on and on. Please, you Canadians that are listening, get John Hutchinson some funding to get a lab going and let the guy show your scientists. Now, yes, he's not a conventionally trained physicist. He doesn't have a PhD. But, man, the guy has brains. He's a treasure. So I would say, you know, keep him in Canada, you Canadians. Goodness gracious. Honest. And also, he producing free energy. He gave me the secrets of his free energy cell, and I built one, and it works. I built seven of them, and one of them worked. And, you know, he takes those things and he can short them out for a year and they can still produce power.
You say you built seven and one worked?
One worked, yeah.
That's part of the problem. Science demands repeatability.
Well, you know, I mean, even when you build integrated circuits, some percentage are going to fail. If I can get one, all I need is one instance of a device that can produce power, and that's all I need. For instance, one flying saucer. You know, one good...
One flying saucer, that's true. Yeah. You've got one device, though, that works, is that correct?
Yeah, it was working, and I started fooling around with it and made it... I was going to improve it, you know?
Yes,
improve how it works. And so it was working. I had enough voltage out of it to produce... power an LED, and so, you know, that convinced me it works. John Hutchinson is a genius. You people in Canada, oh, you could really make some money, huh, if John Hutchinson was released. You know, he can't do his experiments now because, he makes things disappear in other people's apartments and things like that.
All right, Robert, hold it right there. We're at a break point. We'll be back in a moment with Robert Kuntz, Dr. Robert Kuntz. Very impressive credentials. This is Coast to Coast AM. Indeed, here I am. We're talking with Dr. Robert Kuntz, and indeed he's got very impressive credentials, nuclear physics, PhD in nuclear physics at the University of Maryland, staff scientist at Lawrence Berkeley Labs. Then he saw one of those, and that changed his life and obviously changed his point of view on a lot of things, and you've been hearing that tonight. Doctor, you know, a lot of people... like Dr. Greer, as an example, are out searching for the Holy Grail, you know, looking for the real McCoy, the real free energy. And Dr. Greer will come on every now and then, get very excited and say, we've got it, we found it. And then perhaps later suggest that, well, darn it, we didn't find it, we found something wrong with it, or we couldn't verify it, or whatever. And So how would you suggest Dr. Greer and others who are looking for the Holy Grail proceed?
First of all, I would be very careful about making any claims. If there is a device that can work and produce energy and do it reliably and powerfully, I do not like these devices where they power the system and then they calculate the power out versus the power in. It should be self excuse me. It should be self-sustaining if possible. That is to say, it shouldn't have a power plug. Maybe to get us started, that's okay. But and then I would make sure that I was able to produce that power on demand in any given situation. Now, see, one of the problems is if you have a delicate system that's got to be finessed, you can't bring the press in and then, you know, have a flop because they only come once or maybe twice.
Mm-hmm.
So now, Dr. Thomas Henry Moray, in a period of time in the 1920s to the 1950s, gave many, maybe hundreds of demonstrations of his device, but the patent office wouldn't give him a patent because they said, where is the energy coming from? He didn't know, and so they wouldn't give him a patent, and the government wasn't interested because they claimed that it was a private sector matter, on and on and on. And then, you know, as I said before, some of these things, if you get a patent, the government will step in and say, wait, this is a national security issue.
All right. Let's go to San Diego. Gil, you're on with Dr. Kuntz. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Mr. Bell. Thank you for taking my call.
Certainly.
Yeah, you were talking about a Filipino from the who was working on water-powered engines a while ago.
That's correct.
Yeah, his name is Mr. Dingley.
Would you spell that, please?
It's D-I-N-G-L-E, like Dingle.
Bingle. What's his first name?
Dingley.
Bingley.
Yeah.
What's his first name? Do you know?
I forgot his first name now.
Okay.
I'm not sure, but he's a mechanical engineer. And I met him, the first time I met him was in 1977.
I see.
Really?
Okay.
Really?
Tell us more.
Yeah. We were both stopped in a traffic light in Metro Manila in 1977. And what caught my attention was the sign behind his car's rear window that says this car runs 100% water. Runs on 100% water. So I pulled right up to him and asked him, how was that? He invited me over to a gas station across the street, the intersection, and said he explained it to me that he uses a catalyst and also a high voltage source. He popped up the hood, and there was this inside the engine compartment, and there's this. He showed me a small cylinder that contained a catalyst.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he demoed it to me. He said he filled up, I said he was refilling, he filled up with the tank with water, and he said initially the engine, upon starting, he would use gasoline, and after a few minutes, he would switch to water. I went back to the tailpipe, and he started the engine. Okay, I smelled gasoline fumes coming out, and then he said he's now switching to water. After a while, the familiar gasoline fumes went away, and there's just heat coming out from the tailpipe. I put my eyeglasses on the exhaust, and there was water vapor condensing on the lens.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that's wonderful. Thank you very much.
That is remarkable.
What is your name again?
Gil.
Gil.
Yeah, I met him again in the middle 90s. He answered an advertisement because we're doing high voltage ignition systems for cars, and he came over and I said I asked him if he still remembered me, and he said yes. He was using at this time another car also powered by water, and he discussed his designed further. He said he's having problems with the high voltage source. He needed the high continuous high voltage source for the converter. And what I saw inside his hood was a very primitive high voltage.
Caller, let me interrupt and ask you a question. Since you know him, my presumption is that he's still here in Manila. Since I happen to be in Manila, I very much love to meet him and perhaps invite him over here and have him on the air.
Sure. His last address was in Banco Filipino Village in Las Piñas City in Metro Manila.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's an alumnus of Mapua Institute of Technology. You can check out that school.
Okay. All right. I will pursue it, and I'll see what I can do. Thank you very much. That's fascinating. And to sit down with him and actually, in detail, discuss with him and the audience
Art,
what he's done.
Maybe you could get a look at that car.
Maybe I could get a look at that car.
I'd really love to see that.
I would love to see it, too.
Then you could convince yourself. And I'm convinced that this fellow is doing what he said he was doing. And by the way, to do this, you need high voltage. You need, I think, possibly 10,000 volts. I'm not exactly sure of what voltage, but you need something in the neighborhood of 6 kilohertz high voltage at 10 kilovolts, something
okay.
like that.
All right. To my hometown. May never see it again. Bill in Pahrump, Nevada. You're on the air with Dr. Koontz. Hi.
Hi. How you doing? And your hometown is a wonderful place. Let me tell you that, Art.
It is indeed.
We came here for 2 weeks, stay 2 years ago, and haven't left.
All right.
My question has to do with conservation of energy. I have always, and I've talked to people who run power plants, and I've talked to physicists and so on. I don't understand when they produce more electricity than gets used, what happens to that excess electricity?
Okay.
If you have too much demand, you get a brownout. So what happens on the other end when you don't have enough demand to use what's generated?
Okay, that's a good question, actually.
Well, okay, that's a conventional physics question. There are two things here, the unconventional and the conventional. If we stick with the conventional, what happens is that they just stop producing so much power. They reduce the coal into the steam engines and, you know, steam turbines and things like that. And if it's too much demand, well, they just have to reduce the power. They have to reduce the voltage. You get a brownout. Now, with respect to the unconventional, when as far as energy conservation goes, when a free energy device produces one unit of positive energy, it necessarily produces one negative unit of energy if energy is conserved. And I believe energy is conserved. So if you're conserving energy and you're believing in this in free energy, and I do, then you've got to be producing negative energy gauge waves, which are carrying off the energy that has to be accounted for. I'm still conserving energy. I'm not violating energy conservation. Some physicists would say, oh, yeah, he's violating. No. I believe in energy conservation. I use it. I couldn't do my work without it.
All right. Brian in Texas, your turn with Dr. Koontz. Brian?
Yeah, I'm on. Yes.
You are.
Yes. How you doing, Art? How you doing, Dr. Koontz?
Hello.
Yes. My question is, you were talking earlier on the show about the cannonball that was lifted up off the ground, and I was wondering if you've heard of anything larger that has been lifted up off the ground and levitated and floated around or seen.
Well, there's Coral Castle, but a cannonball's pretty good. Anything bigger than that, Doctor?
Well, I haven't been able to check this out yet, okay, very well. But Professor Searle, S-E-R-L, has said that he was able to produce anti-gravitic effects on a larger scale. I don't know if that's true or not. It could be true. I'm not saying it isn't true. I'm not saying it is true. But that has been reported. Other than that, I know of no anti-gravitic effects on a larger scale.
Well, a cannonball satisfies me, actually.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Brad in Syracuse, New York, you're on with Dr. Koontz.
Hello, Art. It's an honor. Dr. Koontz and Art, getting back to your antenna towers, mm-hmm. I don't know if you remember the That's right. It was, I sure. couldn't leave.
Sure.
I wonder if maybe with all the conductivity you have with your towers, if you're picking up just static electricity and causing that arc. And I'll take my answer off the phone. Thank you.
Okay. If that were the case, believe me, I considered it. The towers, of course, are, or the antenna, I guess I should say, is insulated in every case from the towers. It would have to be to function as it does. If that were the case, if it was simple static electric buildup, then you wouldn't notice, there wouldn't be a steady, you can sit there with the switch and go, ch-ch-ch-ch, just that quickly, and you get the same size giant spark every time, ch-ch-ch-ch. So if it was static electricity, you'd have a buildup, and then you'd have a discharge in a period of time before it would build up again. There is no period of time before it builds up, so no, it's something else.
Not only that, Art, static charges tend to not allow for much current flow. It sounds like you were getting a pretty good spark there.
Mm-hmm. We certainly were.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'll tell you something. That's a fascinating thing, that antenna. You should repeat what Tesla did and run a machine off of it.
it's tempting. It's very, very tempting. All right. Syracuse, New York. Well, wait a minute. We just did that, didn't we? Let's go here to Florida, and you're on with Dr. Kuntz. Good morning.
Hey, Art. Good Lord. I love your show so much. I'm just wondering, do you know how much wattage you're getting from your giant antenna in Nevada?
No, specifically, I don't. In fact, in the early times, to be honest with you, I was spending all my time trying to figure out how the hell to get rid of it, because it destroyed a couple of very expensive radios that I had. So I had to end up with a large device which actually literally kept the antenna on ground all the time. RF can bypass that, and so that's what made it usable for me. No, I never did a direct test with regard to current. I can tell you this, though. We burned out a 100-watt bulb, boom, like that. So
that's quite a bit of power.
Yeah, that's quite a bit of power. It's more than I would have expected. I would have expected all voltage and little to zero, little current.
You said the breakdown was approximately over an inch. So if that's 30,000 volts, and let's suppose there's 1 amp, that would be 30,000 watts for maybe a second.
Mm-hmm. Caller?
I'm curious. You think it's possible the giant triangle you saw was a dirigible, a floating craft?
Oh, you can't rule it out. There are stories about lighter-than-air aircraft that are triangular, and I suppose anything's possible, but... Oh,
no, I don't think so.
This thing was 150 feet at the most above me. It was massive. It was enough that when I saw it and my late wife saw it, it just, you know, the stars went away, the moon went away. It was a clear night in the desert. There was absolutely no sound. You could hear crickets. I've told this story so many times, at a quarter mile away or half mile away. And this thing silently moved over us. Our mouths dropped. We stood there and watched. We'd stop the car. The thing continued on over to the west-northwest until it finally disappeared. And as, thank heavens, I wasn't the only one who saw it. It was seen all over the Pahrump Valley. So, in fact, it was a newspaper story. And the Air Force came back and commented that they indeed had overflown the Pahrump Valley with a secret mission with a C-130, which I thought was completely... completely insulting.
Those are very noisy aircraft.
A C-130 would rattle your teeth at 150 feet.
Yeah.
And it also would be doing something called flying, which this wasn't. Little Rock, Arkansas brings Rick for Dr. Kuntz. Good morning.
Hey, Dr. Kuntz, Mr. Bell. Absolutely, this is the most fascinating listen to. And I understand the question I have here is Newton's law. You know, for every action, there is an opposite and equal reaction.
Right.
And why can't that apply to energy? And I think that's what Dr. Kuntz is trying to say, in a way.
He is saying that.
And that makes so much sense to me. And I'm not a scientist. I'm just a mechanic. But what he says makes sense.
Well, I guess it does. It underscores gauge transformations. Is that a fair comment, Doctor?
That's correct. Let me just say something. Yeah, underscores gauge transformations. And let me just say something about what this man just said. He said, I'm just a mechanic. Well, let me tell you something. You know, you're just a mechanic, but you're a person who can do change the world. There are lots of people I've discovered so many times that just ordinary people, maybe a housewife in Nebraska or Colorado, just won't let the subject go, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And she works on it, or he works on it, and sticks with it and makes it happen. Individuals make things happen. People can change the world. You can do it.
Doctor, where does your research go from here?
Well, I'll tell you, Art, I pretty much tapped into my life to the point where I'm wearing clothes with holes in it. But, you know, in order to proceed, I've got to raise a little bit of money. And
okay. For some reason, the doctor appears to have just disappeared. Raising money. It always really does come down to raising money, doesn't it? Well, I'm sure we'll get him back on the line here in a moment. I kind of feel sorry for him. People who have a life-transforming event, as this man has had, and then begin experimentation and trying to look into what they saw, or I guess prove the technology behind what they saw, can get to the point where it becomes all-consuming, and in fact, all-consuming of your money as well. Are you back, Doctor?
Hello there. Yes,
good.
I'm back.
Yes, okay. Yes. So it is all-consuming, and apparently it's consumed your finances. Is there anywhere to turn?
Well, I don't know. I was thinking about writing to the Department of Energy, but, the atmosphere is so hostile against anything associated with free energy that I've been hesitant. Now, maybe this will change things. Maybe things will change. I don't know. But I tell you something. There's me and there's some other people, like John Hutchison. I'm telling the people of Canada, you could make yourself some money. You could really, it's going to take a couple of years to get it worked out. But if you help this fella out,
Doctor, you don't have to, but if you would like to give out your email address, you could mine for gold.
Okay. Well, anyhow, on my website, there's my email address. That's drkoontz.com, drkoontz. And my email address is Bob, it's complicated, bobkoontz@earthlink.net. Bob Koontz at earthlink.net.
Okay.
And if anybody does help me, I tell you, I don't have it. I'm one of those monk-type physicists. I don't look for, I just live. As long as I have enough to live on, I'm not looking to get, I want to see America prosper again. I want to go back to the 1950s economically. I don't want to see 7 million people out of work. We need to be able to drive our cars with no gasoline. We need to be able to power our homes without any.
Surely would change the world, Doctor. Oh. Edward in Vancouver, B.C., you're on with Dr. Koontz.
Yes, hello. We are a smart bunch of people up here in Canada with that person you're talking about. And I'd like to say that sympathies to you with your situation with dealing with the government. I hope that gets resolved.
Thank
Mr.
you.
Bell. And, okay, my question, if you have a moving charge with an electric charge and it moves and it changes directions, that is going to emit electrical energy in the form of a field, correct?
Photon.
Right. Okay, and what is that in every atom? A moving electron that circles around the nucleus. So I was wondering, where does that energy come from? Is it giving off energy, and where does it come from? If you had an atom that was just like by itself and left it with the electron, would it slow down after a while because it kept on giving off this energy?
That's an excellent question. Now, that's very fundamental to quantum physics. And it has to do with the wave nature of matter. But let me just say this. According to conventional theory, the electron in that particular case, say you have a hydrogen atom with an electron around a proton, that part, electron is accelerating, and ordinarily accelerating charged particles emit radiation, photons. But in this particular case, the photons are not emitted, and so you can that electron can circulate around that proton forever and not emit any known electromagnetic radiation. Your question
All right.
is very good. Very good. Excellent.
It is indeed. Doctor, we are out of time.
Oh, what a shame.
We've just gone through a long – it's just amazing how quickly talk radio moves. It's, you look up at the clock and, phew, man, it's gone. So, Doctor, thank you for joining us this evening. I wish you the very best of luck, and perhaps somebody out there, a moneyed person, will see to it that your work continues, perhaps in more comfort.
Thank you, Art. I really appreciate you. You're a wonderful fellow, and you're a great man. Take care.
Thank you, and good night, Doctor.
Good night.
All right, well, that's it. From this, not the desert, but this part of Southeast Asia, quite the opposite, as a matter of fact. Any of you have the opportunity to review what I have on the website, coasttocoastam.com, I'd appreciate it. If you can jot off a note to the president after you've read it, I'd appreciate that. And I'll see you, I believe, we're set up for a show on the 26th or so. From Southeast Asia, good night.